And what's your full name?
Dagmar Marie Telfer Mufamia.
And the names of your parents?
My mother was Asta Marie Ingeborg Rodholm Telfer. My father was Robert Griffith Telfer.
And the Danish background, how was that in your family?
My mother was 100% Danish. Her father immigrated from Denmark. And her mother was born in the United States, but her father and mother both were immigrants from Denmark.
Where did they come from?
My mother's father, Soren Peter Damsgaard Peterson Rodholm, he was born in Mørke in Randers Amt, north of Aarhus, and then his family moved to Aarhus where he grew up. My grandmother's father came from Bulving, near Ringkobing, near the Nissen Fjord. And his name is Kulhilek. And he was married to Karolina.
That's in Danish, Kulhild.
Yeah, see, I can't say it properly.
K-J-U-L.
Yes,
yeah.
That's it.
Kulhild.
And the farm is still there. I've been there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he married Karolina Amalia Brandt, and she was from Fyn. She was born in Aunslev and grew up in Ullerslev.
And they decided to immigrate.
Well, okay, Peter Kohlhede attended the Oslo Folk School and prepared to become a minister. And
in America.
In America.
How come? How come he got?
Well,
he was an
illegitimate child, and his grandfather died, and the farm, the Kohlhede farm, went to the Paulsons, I think, another family. So his mother married and had more children, leaving him and another half-brother to be raised by their grandmother. But they had to begin working on farms. And so he did, for many years, work on the farms. But he got this opportunity to go to Oslo, which I'm sure that means he had other education before he got to Oslo, and to prepare to be a minister. And then he was, I think the Intermission actually financed those trips for people from Oslo. In the meantime, Karolina Malia Brandt, her family were mill makers in Fyn, and so her grandfather and her father were both, first they helped make mills and then they were millers, right? So she was actually born in a mill, right? And she became a housekeeper and worked in quite a few different places. And she ended up becoming the house mother of the Vidhus in Oslo Folk School. So that's where they met, right? So he went, and he sent for her quite quickly.
Around what time was that?
Gosh, without my notes, I had to. Can I remember the exact dates?
No. Okay.
Late 1870s, early 1880s.
Quite early, actually.
Yes. Mm. Yes. And because Peter was present at the meeting where there's a split in the church, right? In fact, his notes are in one of the books that's published about that split. One of the and they were married, I think, in Muskegon, Michigan. And my grandmother, Momo, was born in Muskegon. He served in Illinois. The church name is escaping me at the moment. He served in a lot of places. And here in Minnesota, in Albert Lea, I think it's called, L-E-A, I'm not sure how to pronounce that. And he served in Looking Glass, Nebraska, and he served in Newell, Iowa, for a long time, right? And he was part of the ministers who helped to start Grand View, and he sent my grandmother there in 1898, which was like the second or third year of Grandview. And then that's my grandfather, and then that's my grandmother's family, and they're mm-hmm. already here in the United States. Mm-hmm. Then my grandfather, his father was also an illegitimate child, mm-hmm. but his mother was related to the owner of the Rodholm Farm, which is also in Ronners near Milka. Mm-hmm. And his father and his mother were his mother did not marry his. Which one am I talking about? So my grandfather's father was one of his illegitimate, right? And he married, had my grandfather. They had a couple of children who died, but they ended up with four living children. Mm-hmm. And I think my grandfather was the only one born in Mirka. And they had a little farm, and I think they lost the farm. It's still there. It's in Bale, B-A-L-E, right?
Yeah.
And then they moved to Aarhus, and I think my great-grandfather then worked in the brewery. I think there was only one in Aarhus at the time. They lived near the cathedral, right? Mm-hmm. And they did receive good education, so I think the owner of the farm probably provided them the funds for that. But when my grandfather was ready to go to university, there was some problem with why he couldn't go to university. Money, whatever. So his father went back and contacted his natural father, who had a small business somewhere in Ronners. But he had had a son by his wife, who had immigrated to upstate New York. So he wrote to this son in upstate New York and said, "Will you please pay for a passage for my grandson?" Right. So I actually have a tape with my grandfather talking about this. Right. So my grandfather immigrated to New York, arriving, I think, January 4th, 1892. We have the letter. We have lots of documentation on this family. And he went to upstate New York. He worked on a farm for a while. He hated it. He got sick. He went back to Denmark. And I'm not quite sure how it happened, but within a year or two, he came back to the United States, to Des Moines, Iowa, where he became a seminary student at Grandview, mm-hmm. which is where he met my grandmother. They married in Newell, married by Peter Colhe. And after the wedding, in the morning, my grandmother played the piano for some service in the afternoon. In the meantime, my grandfather's sister had come from Aarhus, and she was at the wedding. And so the three of them got on a train and went to Fredsville, Iowa, where Bestefa, S.D. Rodholm, became a minister, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then within a year or two, they brought the parents over from the United States, the Rodholm parents, the man who worked in the brewery, and he became the bell ringer at the church in Aarhus, in Fredsville.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they brought the other two siblings. No, they brought one of the two other ones. Daughter Marie came on her own. She was already there. Then they brought mm-hmm. Anna. Mm-hmm. She came. There was one daughter, Petra, who stayed in Denmark, mm-hmm. never came. Mm-hmm. So the daughter who came and was at the wedding is Joy Ibsen's grandmother, mm-hmm. who is here yeah. today. Yeah, mm-hmm. that's how we're related. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So, but the reason that I brought this, our whole family, up for your study is because my grandfather was very, very much a Grundtvigian, and he was in the church from, 1901 to whenever he retired in the 40s. Mm-hmm. He translated 150 Danish hymns, many of which we've been singing, right? And many of them Grundtvigian. I think in spirit they were all Grundtvigian, right? Mm-hmm. But he was not an otherworldly person. He was very much of the tradition of, this is the beautiful life that God has given us, and we will worship it, And I mean, we will appreciate it and we will love it. And we love God because of that. And I know Grundtvig wrote otherworldly hymns, but Bestify did not translate those, as far as I can tell. Right. So he was president of Grandview for a few years, and he was president of the Synths. Was he president? I'm not sure. I can't remember that. He was president of Grandview for a few years. In fact, when my mother was born, she was born at Grandview. But and they ended up with, I think Momo had 11 births and raised 8 children. They lived in Oscove, Minnesota from 1919 to 1926. Yeah. And they were briefly in Tyler, like, for 1 year.
What is the date and place of your birth?
August 20th, 1941, in Berkeley, California.
Yeah? And what was your schooling like? Where did you go to school?
I went to public schools in California for primary through secondary. I went to Stanford University in California for my bachelor's degree in history. And then I went to be trained to become a teacher at San Francisco State. And after many years, I went back to school and got a Master's of Business Administration from California State University at Dominguez Hills. And along the way, I'm a lifelong learner, so I have courses many places, and 2 certificates, one in occupational safety, and one in teaching English as a second language for fun. And also I have 14 units of electronics for fun. Mm-hmm. So if that's Grundtvig and lifelong learning, I've got it.
Good. I think it would be good just to get the link also with your parents, because now you talked about your grandparents. What was the name of your parents?
Okay, well, my mother, Asta Marie, she didn't like Ingeborg, so she was Asta Marie Rodholm. Mm-hmm. So she had her primary schooling in Oscove, and then they moved back to Grandview, mm-hmm. and that Grandview offered an amazing opportunity for the staff members, because their children could go to school, at that time high school and 2 years of college. Mm-hmm. So mother did that, and then she was trying to figure out what to do with her life. And she had a sister, Dagmar, the one I'm named after, mm-hmm. who fell in love with somebody who lived in California, right? But it was Danish American, because mm-hmm. there were communities, Danish American communities in California. So she left, and somehow mother, between wanting to have an adventure and go to Alaska or somewhere to finish her mm-hmm. education, mm-hmm. And my grandmother wanting her to take care of her sister Dagmar, she followed Aunt Dagmar to California in
mm-hmm.
1934.
Mm-hmm. Where to?
To Berkeley, California. Well, no, they went to Oakland, California, right? And they were also in San Francisco and Alameda. Mother attended the Danish church in Oakland, which I'm not sure it had a permanent minister at that time, because in the meantime, her older sister had married Enoch Mortensen, and he had the church in Salinas. So I think he might have come up at that time to preach in the Oakland church, too. I know that's where I was baptized, by Enoch.
Yes.
And I know a few, well, I also know that Joy Ibsen's father also became the minister in Oakland, right?
Excuse me, I think that the time is running.
Okay.
So
you want to eat? Dinner.
Yeah. We'll go on just after, couldn't
we? Oh, sure, that would be fine.
So
we'll
just stop for now.
Okay.
Could you tell me a little about your childhood?
Okay, well, as I mentioned before, I was born in Berkeley, California. My mother had finished college at the University of California, Berkeley, and became a social worker. And then my father independently was a social worker. They met, married, and I was born there. then we briefly lived in Salinas with Uncle Enoch Mortensen. when I was a baby. World War II then started. I was born in August of 41. Pearl Harbor was bombed in December. My father took a job with the Red Cross in Phoenix, and then he joined the military. And my mother ended up moving with me to Des Moines to live in an apartment behind where her retired parents were, the Rodholm parents. And then that's where my brother was born. And we had, you know, a few years of living with with the grandparents. Right? And then after the war, we moved back to California and back to the Bay Area, and then Sacramento, and then back to Southern California. And I already mentioned my education. And Mother always kept the Danish traditions in the house, the Danish stories. And she was, being a preacher's daughter, she always said she had enough of the church life. So she took us to church often enough to make sure that we knew we were Danish Lutherans. And we would drive across from, I remember it in the Southern California, we'd drive across the Los Angeles area from where we lived to go to the Danish church in Los Angeles. And my grandmother visited us often after my grandfather died, and she would usually come for a month at a time, so I had a lot of time to spend with her. And I don't know if it was part of being Danish or part of being American of that age, that you do things with your hands. You have to do needlework and stuff. So I learned a lot of that from her, which was really quite a heritage to have. And then many of our family members too. This is post World War II, and people began to have enough money to take trips, but it was before the time people would just go and stay in a resort or a hotel. So our families would always come and stay with us, and then we would come and visit our families. So one of the major trips was in 1949 when I was 8, and that was here to Tyler, Minnesota, where we had a family reunion in this building, right? And I remember quite a lot of that, actually, right? And
you talked about you had some Danish traditions and things your mother brought.
Yeah, and my father was quite happy with that. I mean, he enjoyed it. I mean,
his background was quite different.
His background was he had a Irish Catholic mother, although she was born in California, but her family came from Ireland, and his father's family came from Scotland, and they were Scotch Presbyterian. She was uneducated, a milliner. My grandfather was a doctor, so it was a match made in Hellereda. So, I mean, he had a very bad childhood in some ways because of the difficulties between his parents. And I think he loved my mother's, the closeness of the family and the sense of community. That's the other thing I think I've picked out of what I know, is that there's a really true sense of community. I think it's part of the Grundtvigian tradition, but it depends on how you look at it, because if you take that too far, you get closed communities with everybody talking about everyone else that makes it become uncomfortable. But if you take it in, I think, what would be the best way, you have people relating to each other and also leaving breadth and freedom, and which I think is what we've come to, you know, now. But a lot of that has to do with many more influences like urbanization and, you know, this sort of thing. But so I think that the tradition that most families really carry on are Christmas traditions, right? So, I never believed in Santa Claus, but I absolutely believed in the Yule-nisse.
Yeah? Okay. Okay.
Because my mother had convinced me she never lied, right? Mm-hmm. And we always put the rice out for the Yulanese. Yeah, and the rice was always gone. And I, whatever questions I asked, I knew mother wouldn't lie. So somebody had to get the rice. And I think I must have been 11 or 12 before my brother actually saw her throw the rice away. But she had Yulanese stories, right?
Yeah. That's a dilemma of many parents in Denmark.
Oh, okay.
To tell the truth. Or... yeah. Okay. Are there other traditions, sort of specific traditions, that you remember in your home when you were younger?
Another Christmas one is we always had I called it a model gob. Always, right? And now I'm married in Africa.
Mevageva. Okay, is that when you eat rice pudding?
Well, my mother didn't like the rice pudding, so she made her American. That's the way people transition. My mother was a fussy eater, and so she didn't like rice pudding. So we had the almond in the mashed potatoes, right?
Okay.
Yeah, and I've now passed that on to my African family, and they have the almond and the mashed potatoes. Right?
Okay, very interesting. That's very interesting.
And my son, who's half African and half white American, so he's this really tall black guy, mostly tall because I'm so tall, because the Kohivas were so tall, right? Mm-hmm. When he meets Danish people, they only believe him when he knows about putting almonds and getting a gift. And now he married a Latvian, so now we're having a very interesting comparison of Danish tradition with Latvian tradition. But I think other things are more subtle, you know. I mean,
like what?
Well, it's hard for me to separate what might actually be Danish from what might just be something else. But I think a value for learning is definitely something my mother definitely had, and my father had that too, but I think I got it more from my mother, right?
What kind of learning? Because it's not every kind of learning that's from this tradition.
Well, no, not necessarily, but I think for me the way it translates to me is, it's for me, it's every kind of learning, right? I mean, almost everything can get me in everything except sports. I don't have time for that. I mean, but intellectual things, right? Ideas, concepts, philosophies, those, you know, we talked about a lot of things about religion and
in your home.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, things like the virgin birth, for instance. And my mother would tell me that she had questioned her father a great deal about that. And he had a way of answering her that was kind of like, all life and all birth is a miracle, period. Yeah.
Good answer.
Yeah, he was. And
it's fine. It's fine. We'll cut that out. We'll cut you up.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, it's fine.
I think everyone in my family, on my mother's side, have been people who volunteer, get involved in things that are for the common good. And I must say, almost everybody in the family is politically liberal, right? In fact, the only cousins, Rodholm cousins I have who are not liberal, were the ones whose my uncle died when they were quite young, and they were raised by their Catholic mother who was not a Rodholm and further away, right? And people, I think that tolerance for people was there. I mean, that was with my grandparents, it was with my uncle. So I can't know that I can tie that to Grundtvig or not, you know. I mean, for one thing, I don't think I officially knew who he was or anything until, I don't know, much, much later in my life, you know. But it's then that I discovered that I love this philosophy. I mean, I love what I learn about it. I love what I learn about Denmark. even though there are, that's not all good, I know, but I mean, I've been there several times, I think three times now, and it's just wonderful. I mean, I just I feel like there is a heritage there, right?
Yeah.
And I think because Americans become, and then I can see it happening, I'm already half, right? Mm-hmm. My son is a quarter Danish, right? Mm-hmm. Many people belong to 10 different backgrounds. And it's hard to have a heritage if you have so many different backgrounds, right?
Then you have to choose one, sort of.
Well, but it's fun, like, for children. Like, I mean, we were taught when we finished a meal, we said, tak for mal, and, you know, we said, velvakomp, and you say, favel, and people leave. And you make certain foods. And I think those are the things that I could put my hands around, but I haven't really given it a great deal of thought to think more about it. I mean, I think I have thought about, like I grew up in, who were my heroes, right? Mm-hmm. Well, number one hero was Eleanor Roosevelt, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it has anything to do with Grimby. And Paul Robeson was number two. And then Walter Reuther was number three. So I don't know, if you know who Paul Robeson or Walter Reuther are, but Paul Robeson was black American who, do you know him? Right? No. Okay. He was outstanding sports person and intellect. And yet he suffered, of course, the discrimination of, this is in the 20s and so on. And he left the United States for Russia. But he had this beautiful, absolutely gorgeous singing voice. And he sang this beautiful song about America. So it just makes you cry. And my mother actually saw him sing that. So those were sort of stories that she would tell me. Right? And Walter Reuther was the leader of the United Auto Workers. Right? And of course, unions are very important. And I think some of the people that I have the yearbooks, my mother's yearbooks from Grandview, and I know at least one of the persons that she liked a lot who wrote there became a labor organizer. And so I think that what the Danish tradition, it brings a lot of literacy, a lot of, you know, people don't suffer from not being encouraged. It's just expected that you will study, that you will do well. But it's not forced upon you. My parents never did, you know, force us to do well in school. It was just a given that you would do that and that you would read. And they would talk about books, and mother read books to us because as a child, her mother always read books to her. In the evening, she'd call all the kids into one room. Mm-hmm. And then I never thought about that until my mother was very, very old, and she was telling me, she was remembering that, and she said, oh, but you don't know any of the stories that mother read, because they were Danish, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
You got married.
Yes, I got married. When I left school, I took a... I was going to be a teacher, but I didn't really want to settle down and be a teacher. So I looked for opportunities to go overseas, and I was accepted in a program that was called Teachers for East Africa, and was the American Agency for International Development and the British government were combined in this group. So I went with that, and I was assigned to teach in Kenya. And I taught in a girls' secondary school.
How old were you? What time was that when you got there?
It was 1964, August. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I turned 23 a few days after I arrived in Kenya. So for 2.5 years, I taught up in a very small village on the slopes of Mount Kenya, and. In a girls' school that was founded by British missionaries, and the other teachers were British missionaries. Then I had one African teacher live with me, and but then my husband met me right away. He was the principal of a intermediate school close by, and we started going to dances and things. And, and then at the end of my contract, I came back to the United States, but we had already decided to marry. But I owed money to the Kenyan government for my taxes. I had to come home. I had to come home to prepare my parents, too. Mm-hmm. So I did, and then I went back to Kenya. We got married. In the meantime, his brother and his brother's wife had died in an automobile accident, leaving five orphan children. So we married with five children, and then we had one of our own. Right? So, and then I ended up teaching in the international school in Nairobi, and I actually met some of my Danish American relatives in Kenya. My Uncle Enoch's sister, Lydia Mortensen, married Sven Godfredson. I think they might have been in Dagmar, Montana at one time. Mm-hmm. And their son, Gene, he was an astronomer from the Harvard PhD, but he ended up teaching science teachers in Kenya, and I met him there. So we have that link. It goes round the whole world, right? And because it just seemed better for our family, we decided to move back here to the United States. So we did that in 1977. Mm-hmm. And three of my adopted children have come to the United States. The two oldest ones did not.
Okay. Yeah. That was quite a change for your husband.
Well, yes, it was. Well, first off, for me, I became an immigrant myself into my own country, because I had never been an adult living on my own before I left. So I did experience some of what it is like, a little bit of what it's like to be an immigrant. Mm-hmm. But my husband was definitely an immigrant, and you know, he grew up with no shoes and herding goats and no electricity. We'd even lived for 6 years. We lived with no electricity, so. It's very different, yeah. Yeah. I remember the first time my young son saw a toilet that flushed. He couldn't believe it. He had to keep going back to watch it do that. But for him being the youngest, the transition was not a problem. The two older children two of the three older children, I think it was difficult for them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the oldest girl, she had her own path. In fact, if you want to see a circle again, my oldest adopted daughter, 100% a Kenyan, met and married the grandson of Enoch Mortensen. Right.
Wow. That's quite amazing.
I love it. I love the way. But actually in Africa, everybody's all related like that too. So I think I belong to a tribe. Yes. And Dam was definitely a tribal name. Right?
Where did you move and live when you arrived?
We moved to Southern California because we came, you know, with no money, no job. We had to go right where my parents were. I wanted to live in Northern California, but it didn't work out. So, and I, for one reason or another, I did not get back into education, and I ended up doing human resources, right? Mm-hmm. So I've been a human resources person. I've done lots of different things in human resources, and
like,
I still
like what,
do that.
Like what?
Different positions. Just being like a manager or a director, or just for different types of companies, mostly manufacturing injection molded plastics, steel drums, and. I've mostly worked in smaller companies, that is, with less than 1,000 employees. So it's...
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
You can do that. That's okay.
You do everything. It's really a full thing of hiring and getting benefits and knowing what the laws are and counseling people and... And I got involved in quality, and I did a lot of that. And we worked, the plastics company, we manufactured for other big companies like Hewlett-Packard and Mitsubishi and Sony, and we'd interact with them, and I had a lot of fun doing that. And I was responsible for plants in Southern California, Northern California, Portland, Oregon, Salt Lake City, Utah, and north of Atlanta, Georgia. And then I left that and for 7 years I was a consultant with an employers association where I taught about various things to our members and I answered their questions and helped them with their problems. And for the last 3 years, I've been a human resources generalist for the Boeing company in Long Beach. Okay. Okay. So, whole new thing. Now I'm worrying about airplanes, right?
Yeah, your children have talked about they. I have three adopted children
who are 100% Kenyan, and then one child who's mine, right? My birth child, right?
Have they any tradition of what you was brought up with, the Grundtvigian Danish tradition? Have they adopted any part of that?
Well, my son definitely, my natural child definitely has.
Yes.
And he actually, my husband and I had him baptized as a Presbyterian because where we lived in Kenya, there was a Presbyterian church and a Catholic church. That's it. We had no Lutherans at all, right? And my husband is a Presbyterian. But when we came back to the United States, my son became involved with a Boy Scout troop that was in a Lutheran church. Mm-hmm. And so he was interacting with my mother and his aunts and cousins and, you know, learning that about the different parts of his American family. And so he actually was confirmed as a Lutheran of just his mm-hmm. own accord. That's what he wanted to do, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so he's... But he... Now he's married to a Latvian Lutheran, and her family also has... her grandfather was also a minister. Mm-hmm. They're more recent immigrants, and their ties are even tighter than... Mm-hmm. So I've taken them out to Yorba Linda, to the church out there, and it's okay, but... Mm-hmm. They're going to end up in the Latvian church more often.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the Latvian tradition is, I don't think, quite as open. But her family is. Her father was a famous Latvian poet, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of, that's really interesting stuff, you know. And they're the people I've met who, and her family are also, I feel they're like-minded, right? So I don't know about the rest of the Latvians, but mm-hmm. and her family.
Like-minded to what you, what you.
What I, what my feel I am, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, but my other children are kind of, it's kind of different, you know, I'm not mm-hmm. quite sure where they are in terms of, well, because first of all, if you're in a mixed race family, mm-hmm. you also have issues that way. So my daughter first married, the younger one, she first married a Jamaican and has a child by the Jamaican mm-hmm. who now is getting her PhD in Oregon in chemistry. Mm-hmm. And then she divorced him and she married a Nigerian engineer. Mm-hmm. And they have a 13-year-old son, right? And then the older daughter married Mortensen's grandson, so. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't have any children. And she mm-hmm. sings opera, right, mm-hmm. and does various things.
Very varied.
Yeah, very varied, right, yeah. And then my older son married a woman whose father is Armenian, mm-hmm. and I think he's an immigrant from Palestine, right, mm-hmm. and they had two children and lived in, she's from Chicago, and then they divorced, but now, I don't know, they're back together, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So,
after this long period of years in Africa, uh-huh. you went to California and started a uh-huh. Career and family life. How did you get, how was your contact with this Grundtvigian group that we are around today?
Well, it's through my family. I mean, it's through, mm-hmm. you know, starting, my mother was still alive, as were all of her sisters, right? There's six right home sisters.
So that was in the family.
That was in the family, right. But then you visit them, and then you meet somebody else, right? And mm-hmm. then you become, mm-hmm. you know, friends with them. But I think, and we've had family reunions and things, but I can't remember... I don't remember the train of whatever happened that from one thing to another. Uncle Enoch retired to Solvang. I live close to Solvang. My Aunt Nana encouraged me to come to the Farstrip Morton lecture series. So I didn't do that all the time, but I did it. So I met a lot of people there, right?
So that gradually became stronger, that the ties.
Oh, yeah. And more thought out, because I hadn't thought about that so much, right? You know, and I still haven't thought through all of it, right? Yeah. But then I ended up taking Danish lessons at the Danish church in Yorba Linda, right? Mm-hmm. But by the time I do that, man, our family, I personally am, was very close friends with Olaf Lund, who was the son of the minister who was in the church when we occasionally went, right? Mm-hmm. And who lived then, who'd retired to Solvang. And so the ties keep, you know, kind of coming, right, from one bit to one bit to one bit.
Yeah, and that's the way it works.
It's the way it works.
And actually, when you look back, it might look different, but this is the kind of
small steps. And then, Grandview Grandview decided to dedicate a room to my grandfather, right? Mm-hmm. And then the whole family, we had a reunion around that, which was another way for me now to look at Grandview and to look at the tradition that comes through that institution, right? And then my aunt got started in this project to write this, to translate these letters, right? That because my mother was, she could not have done editing, and even my aunt was a little bit, it was a big project for her. So the fact that I was more fluent with word processing, and besides I loved it, I jumped at the chance to get to do that. It was a great project, right? Mm-hmm. And that brought me closer to a lot of people, and then traveling, and we stayed with some of my aunt's friends in Skiva. Then they came to visit. My aunt calls me from Minnesota and says, "You have to come. We're going to take them. They're coming. These friends are coming. We have to drive them down to the museum in Elkhorn," right? And I would do it. And then, because I'd met all these different people, and the Danish Immigrant Museum needs representation from different parts of the country.
Oh, am I interrupting? Did Ricky come through?
That's Ricky? Okay. I'm fine. No. We'll cut you out.
Oh, good. Yeah.
She is there.
I'll do it.
I think we're coming to the end, but I have one more question, at least. Would you consider yourself a Grundtvigian?
Yes.
And that involves what?
Well, first of all, I think I absolutely admire him for, number one, doing all the translation of those ancient texts. And it's only recently I came to realize that bespoke of reestablishing Danish nationalism. Yeah. And of course now I've been studying Danish for about 6, 7, 8 years, but not with any professional teachers, so my Danish is absolutely horrible. But I have learned so much about Denmark. And I've been on the board of the museum, so I have learned so much about Denmark. So I think that the admiration there for scholarship, the folk school thing, lifelong learning, is something I totally believe in. I think that's just absolutely fantastic. I think that the anchoring your religion in the beauty of the world we have, and in the preservation of that beauty, being our modern extension of it, I think that's part of the Grundtvigian thing, and I think that's just the most important thing we have, right? And I also, I've tried to understand the split in the church. And Thorvald Hansen, who writes a lot, he had wrote one book on the seminaries, and in it he gives me the first real clue. He thought it was primarily a personality difference. And I've come to that conclusion, because these guys were not that different. I've read too many of my great-grandfather's letters to think that he was different in terms of dancing and playing cards and all that stuff about being pious versus not. But sorry, I kind of got lost in that point, but it's what I come to realize is I think what he was trying to emphasize was a sense of community is very important, you know, and Christian first, man first, then Christian. And Hans Claussen, who's here today, who's an immigrant from the 50s, right, and also goes to Yorba Linda Church, so he says that over and over again. I just have to stop thinking. But I think it's human first and Christian. But part of that means that what exists in Christianity is the community, right, of Christians. Mm-hmm. But that's not.
It's fine.
That isn't necessarily a closed community, and maybe I extrapolate from that because maybe Grunfe didn't go that far, but. I don't know, because I've learned that he was partly reacting to the rationalists who were being too much, let's study the Bible and see what's real and what isn't. So I might deviate from him there, because, I mean, I think the God that we have belongs to all of us. And I don't know if he was really there or not, but... And then I think he was in Parliament, and I believe he might have been a socialist, but or budding on that. He was a liberal, right? I think. Mm. And I could be wrong, but...
The socialists were not...
That wasn't socialist, too early.
Were not there.
Yeah, it wasn't, yet. Yeah, so I know that's wrong.
A little later, but... He couldn't have been, because there was...
Right, no, but I think he was... He was for the people, right? Don't you think? Mm. Right, he want the farmers to get educated?
Yeah, sure.
So I don't think he was... well, you can be an intellectual elite in a way too, but anyway, that's kind of where I'm at. So, but I can give you my email address, and as I say, I have a lot of stuff, you know, dates, because I have done a lot of research in family history, so I can nail down dates and stuff. Yes. But probably the only thing I can think of that you wouldn't have come across before. It might be of interest if, I don't know if you'd want to read these letters, if they might. It depends on where you're
going. It is more your story.
Oh, okay.
Based on your own family tradition. But I think we've kind of come very well across.